As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
And we are joined today by an awesome guest who I'm super excited to have here, Jordan Danz. Jordan, how's it going, man?
Hey, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
See ya.
All right, Devin, what do you got for us?
Let me open up my new dictionary of thoughts. I got a real quote off paper here today. The knowledge we have acquired ought not to resemble a great shop without order and without an inventory. We ought to know what we possess and be able to make it serve us in our need.
Oh, I like that one. That's I've never been the cleanest person just in general, but in the things that I do, my hobbies, you know, like I'm an artist and a painter, my studio is always almost always clean and immaculate. Everything's orderly. And my shop is almost always that same way too. Now, obviously it's not perfect. There are people who have really super clean shops, but for what I have, I try to keep everything orderly because it's really important to know what you have, to know your, like, what ammo you have. You know, to be able to see everything and get to it. And I still struggle with that. Like, I'm like, where did I put this thing? And, you know, like, especially after I cleaned my shop recently, it was like a real dagger trying to find stuff. I was like, wait, where did I put that thing? I know I put it somewhere, but I cleaned it up.
Yeah. I just like the idea of a great shop without aim, kind of, you know, it's just like, they're just talking about a great mind without a focus. Jordan, I thought of you because you had said that you got refocused into knife making, and that's what a great thing and what a perfect thing to just focus your energy on, and like a very specific thing, like, cool, I can do this. I know I need this gear. I'm into this. Let's go ahead and put all our energy towards it, or, you know, a good bit of it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny that quote, it makes me think about just inventory in general. And for me, it's more like material, you know, material for knives. I buy so much material, handle material, you know, liner material, pins, all of this stuff. And it wasn't until I actually started like keeping track of that stuff in QuickBooks that I realized, you know, how much material I had that I just was never using.
Yeah, right.
You buy stuff and then, you know, you do these custom orders and people tell you what they want. You go out and buy what they want. And you're sitting on, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of material. So, yeah, it's just madness.
Especially with knives and handle scales. They're so small, you know, relative to a piece of wood that you, like, want to have. It's like buying a paint stir and being like, all right, I got one of these, and now I got the whole board left.
Right, right.
Yeah, buying a whole sheet of plywood for one paint stir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that, though, like you were saying, materials. I think that's that it's definitely that works, you know, especially with people who are making things often, especially like you said, with custom things where you're buying it as someone who does it, either as hobby or professional, you usually buy an assortment because the aesthetic changes, you know, you want to have a variety of things so that way they're on hand. So that way they're there ready for you to use when you want them. You know, so you're not going to buy like one pair of black G10 handle scales, you know, like if you're going to get right. black G10, you know, it's black G10, right? So you might buy like 20 pairs or whatever, you know, you'll buy like an assortment. So you have it. And then, like you said, yeah, I mean, that can get out of hand quickly. I mean, that's just like anything, you know, anything that you're into, if you're not really keeping track of it, you buy it because it excites you and it, you know, you have that variety. Same thing with tools. You know, I'll like be at a yard sale and I'll see a little screwdriver that just is kind of interesting, maybe a vintage looking screwdriver, and I'll pick it up and I'll buy it and I'll bring it home and I'll put it into my, you know, drawer of 50 other little random vintage screwdrivers. I'm like, man, I gotta go through and figure out what I want to do with all these because it's getting a little crazy.
but just in your guys' defense, if you see a antler or a piece of wood or some type of acrylic or something that you like, it's hard to pass that up. Like, oh, this is perfect. I got to keep this around because you guys should know what is good and what's going to come in handy later.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I agree. I think it's good to have that, like I said, kind of that inventory of things, of supplies. I always think of like Adam Savage's cave, you know, he's just like, make sure you have a few of everything because you never know what you're going to need. You know, you want to be able to have it on hand. Or what's his name? Guy from Fireball Tools, Jason from Fireball Tools, has like a whole hardware section in his room, in his like, you know, in his shop where he's just inventing things that's just completely full of every screw and nut and bolt and, you know, washer that you'd need. It'd be fun.
So, Jordan, have you filled up your workspace or your garage yet with all the scales and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, my poor garage. My poor wife, actually. We used to park her car in here. Yeah.
I was
just going to say, it started as one side of the garage with a table, and then it became two tables, and then three, and then I was running out of room, so I started putting tables down the middle of the garage, and that's when she got kicked out, and it's just madness in here.
Devin sent me a message the other day. He says, does Jordan have a YouTube channel? And I was like, I don't think so. And then I went on to your website and I like scrolled to the bottom just to see the little like icons. And I was like, oh, look, YouTube. So I clicked on that and I saw your YouTube channel. So I started watching some videos and stuff. And there's like the early on knife making videos, like when you're just getting into it and you're like, yeah, I'm just using this one part of my shop, you know, just the, on the wall, the middle of the garage is open for my wife's minivan, you know? And then yeah. I watched like your most recent one and you're like working on one side and then you turn around, you work on the other, so it's just benches down the middle of the shop, the garage. I was like, yeah, that changed quick.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It escalated pretty quickly. And it's funny because we have a second refrigerator out here where we keep like beverages and stuff. And
yeah.
The garage is attached to the house. And so like my kids will, I got three kids and they're all young and they'll come out here to get something out of this refrigerator. Well, if they're barefoot, like there's been a lot of times where they're getting some sort of like, you know, metal shard slippers, in their foot. Right. Yeah. And so they've gotten to the point now where they'll like come into the kitchen and be like, Dad, did you grind today? And I'm like, no, I didn't grind today, sweetie. She's like, okay. And she like turn around, go out in the garage, but they know to ask now, which is it's sad and it's comical at the same time.
Yeah. My that's like one of the rules that we've had for my shop downstairs. Like you never come in the shop with bare feet. And you know, I live out in the country and my daughter's a country girl, so she loves running around bare feet all the time. But so she'll like come like running down the shop stairs and like stop right at the door and be like, hey, blah, blah, and she'll like yell to me because she knows there's inevitably going to be like a wood sliver or a metal sliver that she's going to get her foot. She's done multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, stop right there.
So before, Jordan, before we get like your beginning knife story, I just want to say in honor of you, I am... Every podcast, I pull up a photo or painting to look at, so I'm not just staring at my monitor and just watching our levels, you know, bounce. Yeah. So I pulled up a Texas photo today. I don't know where it is, but it looks nice, and it's nice to stare out into the the plains.
Perfect. I love it.
It's become a thing where when we're finished recording, Devin will just text me the image that he's been looking at for the last hour to 2 hours. He'd be like, boom, like every time. And I always forget it's going to happen. And then it just pops up like, boink, this little picture. He's like, this is my scenery today.
Your office.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. So let me introduce you. So those of you who don't know who we are talking to, Jordan Danz is the man behind JD Custom Knives. Jordan's an avid outdoorsman who collects custom knives, and has a YouTube channel, which I mentioned, Outdoor Gear Dad. And then you've been using that for the last couple of years to actually show and talk about your kind of knife making journey and documenting that, which is really cool. So just tell us a little bit about your journey, like how you got into knife making, who were the people you were looking at. I'm not saying that to gloat, because I know we've talked many times. You told me how like you've been watching our videos and learning, but yeah. I know you've taken that a lot further than I have, and you've like reached out to a bunch of other people and learned from a bunch of other people too. So
yeah. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I never thought that I would be at this point. And you know, it's one of those things where I kind of stumbled into knife making, and I had mentioned this to you, Dustin, you know, a few years ago, and not to get all personal and stuff, but it's part of the story is,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I had came to the realization that I had a drinking problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wasn't ruining my family yet, or I wasn't getting DUIs or anything crazy like that, but it was getting excessive, and it was getting to the point where it was out of control. So, I stepped into recovery, and that was amazing, and it was great, and it's, you know, it's been an incredibly awesome journey, and I'm so grateful for that. But it's like one of those things where when you have all of these relationships that were built around, you know, going out to the bars or sitting mm-hmm. in a garage drinking, and you've invested all this time in that and that lifestyle, and then you take it away, it's like, well, what do I do now? You know, it's right. like you're sitting yeah. around and you're like, well, I got nothing to do. So it was really like the perfect time to find a hobby. And I wouldn't call myself a collector. I like outdoor knives. I like bushcraft knives. I like fixed blades, and I like them from custom makers. Mm-hmm. And so I have a good collection. And I don't know, one day I was just like, I'm just going to try and make a knife. And I had literally the only thing I had was like a Dremel and like a drill. Like that's all I had. And I had this saw blade, and I drew, you know, what looked like a knife onto a saw blade, and I used a little cutoff wheel on the Dremel to get it out. And I didn't even have any, like I had like a scrap piece of 2x4 that I don't even remember. I think I used a hacksaw to cut it. And nice. The best part was I didn't have any pins. So like I took one of those wall hooks that you like hang stuff, like you screw into the wall and you hang stuff on, and I hammered it flat and then I cut it.
Nice.
And I made this prison shank looking knife. and I was hooked. I was like,
yeah,
I can do this better. And it's I just transferred all of that. I just transferred basically from one addiction to something else. And it's just been, and you can see it in my YouTube from the, you know, the little corner of the shop to now, you know, it's taking up the whole thing. It's just, it's asinine.
It's well, awesome.
Before like 2019, when you kicked it into gear, did you do other, like, were you a craftsman in other ways or a handy guy? Cause I mean, the progress from there to now is crazy. Your stuff now, it's gorgeous. So did you have a background in any of that type of stuff?
No, I mean, and honestly, like, contrary to popular belief, I still have no idea what I'm doing, you guys. Like, I mean, thank God for YouTube. And honestly, like, that's why this is kind of a surreal moment for me, because I remember after I made that band, the saw blade knife, I started looking on YouTube, and like I found all these great videos, but the problem was they'd get to a point where they'd like walk over to their 2x72 grinder. or they'd pull out this surface grinder and start, you know, flat. And I'm like, I have a Dremel, and like, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And then I stumbled across your guys's file knife video and like watching you anneal it in a fire pit outside. And you were using like a Harbor Freight 4x36. And like,
yep.
And I was like, okay, well, and you, I think you were even using, you know, an angle grinder for, and I just started looking this stuff up and I was like, there's a Harbor Freight right down the road. I can get this stuff for like less than $100 and I can be rolling. So, but to answer your question, no, like I've never been a craftsman. Art and creativity runs in my family. My dad's a commercial illustrator. He can build anything. I mean, he builds all kinds of stuff. So I've known that there's some gene in there. I guess it wasn't until knife making that I actually discovered, you know, and tapped into that a little bit more. So,
Yeah. One of the things that I always, what any knife maker knows, the distinction between a, you know, kind of a, I guess I don't want to say like a bad knife maker and a good knife maker, but like the difference between someone who has an innate ability to create good looking knives and someone who doesn't is that like the fit and finish and like the symmetry and all these things that you take for granted until you realize that sometimes people are doing this by hand. You know, like when you buy a chef's knife from a store, that handle was ground by a machine. So both sides are symmetrical. You know, they're both 3/8. Yeah, but until you start doing something like making a knife and you realize that you have to measure both and you have to grind it and you have to make sure that you're not grinding too far or too less. And if you do, then you have to change that. And all those little things, having the eye to do that really sets off really good and potentially like long running knife makers. And I think that's something that you have, and it looks like that you kind of either caught on or realized kind of early on, like you kind of saw some things and you changed. And like, I watched that video where you kind of showed your first three knives and you showed those second five knives that you had done, you know, and that progression, you could see the progression of how you were starting to see things and like getting better and looking at, you know, like bevel thickness, that's the same way. And, you know, grind lines and cleaning up things. And I think, you know, by this point you've made way more knives than I've ever made. Like I've been a knife maker, a hobby knife maker for a long time since I was in college, but only out of like necessity. I'd make knives when I wanted knives or if I had a friend who wanted something or a friend of the family or wanted something. I never really got into it, but you know, got into it further. But I knew that it was something that as an artist myself, I knew that I could do it and I could make it look good. And it was important to me that they look clean, you know, and that like there weren't any gaps in the handle scales and that everything was as flat as possible. But same thing, when I look back at my early knives, they look like everyone's early knives. You see all like the gaps and stuff. And I did the same thing. I used, you know, like a Dremel to cut stuff out, and I used a grinder and files to put on bevels, and started the same way.
Your early knives look like my only knife, which was the Dremel knife that I did with you, Dust.
Yeah, right.
And that's how I burnt a hole in my sweater that I still wear for that, the Ravens hoodie that I, the dirty one.
Jordan, what, where did you get the idea to do a knife from a circular saw blade? Did you just like look that up online?
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, so I've been a pretty active member on bushcraftusa.com, which is, you know, the bushcraft forum is pretty well known. And there's always people posting stuff that they made. And I think I had seen at some point people posting, you know, pictures of knives they had made out of circular saw blades. And, you know, I just happened to have one laying around that it guess it just made sense.
Right on. Yeah, because I started the same way, and I think I must have just looked it up somewhere. It would have been in like 2000 and, I don't know, maybe 2003 or something like that. I looked up online. I think I was looking for a knife to go backpacking with and didn't want to buy something expensive, didn't have any money. I was in college, and so I was like, oh, let me look. And I forget where I looked, but I did look online, and someone was like, yeah, you can use circular saw blades because they're already heat treated, and for, you know, a beginner knife, it works perfectly fine. And sure enough, you know, it's a great way to start. And it's actually why I did that video of, you know, showing that process, because it's a very doable process for anybody who wants to get into knife making. And you can make a knife that, like, it'll hold an edge okay. You know, like, you could go out, you could use it for a weekend, come back, sharpen it back up, and it's back to usable. You know, it's not great,
but,
you know, for feeling that, like, that sense of accomplishment from making a tool like that, that's like historic, you know, prehistoric, this tool that has been part of man's existence forever, and being able to make one yourself and like go out and use it. And that's a cool feeling.
Yeah. I still have my first, well, actually I think I still have my first three knives.
Nice.
And I do. I mean, I love looking at it. I mean, the thing I love about knife making is just that you can never be perfect. Like, I'll never turn into a machine, you know, like every single knife. The only thing I can guarantee on every single one of my knives is that they're not perfect.
Yeah.
You know, there's there's some element of human error in there. Something's off. And whether the customer sees it or they don't, I know it's there. And it's just like the constant drive to make the next one better than the one before is it's just what keeps me going with it.
And and that's what people look for, is if they get something from you or from another maker, if they don't see like the maker's hand in it, they're disappointed. It's like when I went looking for Amish furniture and it all looked like IKEA. And I was like, well, what's the point? Why am I paying $3,000 for an office desk if I can't even tell, like, I don't know who made it.
Right.
Like, I wanted to see the hand. The same thing. It's like with like great music. Like you don't want the Rolling Stones to be perfect. Right. And all that stuff. You don't want them to be, what was it called? Auto-tuned. And you know, you don't want that. Cause that's where that's the beauty in the art.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Jordan, you know, Don Wynn knives, do you know?
He just put out a video
I think it was yesterday, on making a Damascus chef's knife. And I think, as far as I know, and don't quote me on this, but as far as I know, up until this point, he hasn't really made much Damascus. He just uses mono steel, but does like beautiful work and super, you know, just attention to detail is ridiculous. But he made this video of doing this Damascus knife. You should watch it. It's really funny. But he makes mistakes throughout the video and just is like, it just makes him seem real, you know, like, oh yeah, you are a real person. You're not just this like machine that does like perfect, you know, faceted handles that are exactly right. Everything around, you know, they all do turn out that way, but you know, the mistakes are just there in the process.
Yeah. I think I saw on his Instagram, he was like using a power hammer and it like snapped something and he just like stared at the camera like, oh, I forget what it was, but y'all have to check that out.
Yeah, that's great. And yeah, just, you know, seeing his shop, he's always like working in his shop and it's just like in a garage, like there's a car there and like a fold up plastic table. And he's just like, you know, making these amazing knives, just like any normal person. It's really cool. It's good to see that.
Yeah.
So you, the other thing that I was saying that you've done a lot of, which is super awesome, is that you've kind of reached out to other makers and gone around. I know recently you went to Aaron Gray from AA Gray Knives or AA Knives.
Adam.
Yeah. Aaron's his brother. We actually had Adam on not too long ago, I guess within the last year, obviously. And you more recently went to Sugar Shack Forge as well, right?
Yeah. So Ethan was actually out here. So
cool.
Yeah. I'm kind of just one of those people where it's like, okay, find somebody that has what you want and just reach out to them. And, you know, I've owned a lot of AA Forge. I mean, I had Adam's knives before I was ever making them. And, Ben Orford is another one from Craft Lab Knives.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And so when I started making them, you know, I just made it a point to reach out and ask for help. And, I don't know. It was probably about a year ago. I don't know. Oh, I know what happened. I was on Instagram Live one night and I see AA Forge join my Instagram Live. And I'm like, like, this is like, you know, one of my guys that I look up to. Right. And so he started engaging through the Instagram Live and we carried that conversation over after through like messaging and stuff and built a, you know, a pretty good, you know, friendship just through talking about steel and stuff like that. And, you know, I was just like, hey, I'm going to buy a flight. I'm going to come out. I'll get a hotel. So I'm not bugging you and your family. I'll show up at your shop first thing in the morning and I'll leave when you turn the lights off. I'll sweep. I'll do anything. I just want to learn.
Nice.
And Adam was gracious enough, him and his family, to have me come out. And I spent a week out there. I mean, just like literally show up at 7 a.m. and there were some nights we weren't leaving until after 11, and just,
that's crazy.
I mean, just the amount of information I consumed off of him, and you know, he's still just one of my great buddies. I talk to him almost every day, and just learned a ton from him.
You know, cool. It would have been great if you went and then he just finds out that you're not a hard worker and like you're trying to leave at like 2.
Yeah.
kind of hungry. Like, are we done yet? Like, is it? This guy Jordan came down and he, like, 3 hours in, he didn't want to work anymore. It's weird. Yeah.
He just ate all my food.
Yeah. What a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Ethan from Sugar Shack Forge, he messaged me just like randomly one day. I mean, we had exchanged some messages back and forth, but one day he was just like, hey, you live in Texas, right? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, you don't happen to live in Austin, do you? And I was like, oh, actually I do. And he's like, oh, you know, my fiance's coming out for, she's got a work trip out there and I was going to tag along. Like, you want to spend a day in the shop? Cool. So yeah. So he came over for a day and learned a bunch from him too. And, you know, obviously we make, he forges and I do stock removal, but the transfer of knowledge between those two things, it's just, there's a lot. And
yeah,
it was really great.
That's awesome. Yeah. I've been following Adam from AA Forge for a long time. Like same as you, like long before, well, I guess probably like years before I started YouTube, just seeing the stuff, you know, on Instagram and then just awesome stuff. I love his work. And then I more recently started seeing, Sugar Shack Forge's work. It's funny. I was mentioning Devin right before we started. I was like, yeah, he stole my design. Cause the first time I ever saw his work was like shortly after we put out the Journey Knife video.
And
his aesthetic is really similar to that knife that I put out. So it's, you know, simple puko with simple lines and kind of faceted handle. That's kind of just was like what is in my mind, and I really like that design. And his is really a similar aesthetic. And I know that he has like, and I've looked back past this stuff like earlier on, but it was just the right time that when it like popped up in my feed for the first time, I like showed my wife Nicole. I was like, look, I was like, this guy made like my exact design. And then I like went back to it and I was like, oh, that's just like his aesthetic. But
yeah,
it was really funny. It was just like happened that like right at the same time that I put out that video, he was like, boom, put out a you know, a knife that was the same thing.
That's like the same thing that happens to us and people accuse us, like, or whatever, you know, you make a piece of content.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, we want to do a hammer or something, or we want to do this or, and then someone, of course, a huge channel in front of you will come out and do a hammer a week before.
Right.
Like, oh, now we're gonna put it out and everyone's gonna think we stole, even though it took us a month to shoot.
Yeah.
Right. Or we'll put out the video like the next day. They're like, oh, you copied them.
Right.
I'm like, no, yeah. We didn't shoot and edit and do the whole video in one day after we saw it. We literally can't. Dustin changes outfits 10 times during the video.
Right.
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's the same thing as like, yeah, you get a new vehicle and you start seeing it everywhere. Yeah.
Right, like, right. Oh.
Yeah, but I love his work. It's super cool. So that's awesome. So you said you're from Austin, but you don't have, or at least you live in Austin. You don't have a Texas accent at all.
No, so I'm here. We've been in Texas for a little over 6 years now. I grew up in California, up in Northern California, which is where my entire family lives, and met my wife in college. We were living in LA at the time, and we just kind of progressively got further and further south and in Southern California. And then I was like, we got to get out of this place. And so we came to Texas. Yeah. So we came to San Antonio first. I took a job out here and we moved out to San Antonio. We were there for a year and then a job relocated us up to Austin, which is where we've been for, you know, a little over 5 years. And we're actually on the final stretch, closing on a house out in the country on some acreage with a 1,400 square foot shop. And
nice.
Yeah, really. I mean, just beyond blessed for this whole situation and that's really excited awesome. To not have to have my kids walking through barefoot and just having a dedicated space.
So. Get stabbed in the foot just because they want a Fresca.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So you went to Austin before it was cool to go to Austin.
Yeah, we beat the mass exodus out here, and we actually came out to Texas to actually embrace Texas. and not change it. In fact, we wanted it to go even further back to the way it used to be. But yeah, it's Austin is it doesn't feel like Texas. It doesn't feel like Texas at all.
Yeah.
Right. So I want to. So you said you had some AA knives before you started making. So were you a collector, or did you just have a few high price knives? Because it's not for someone, a non knife enthusiast, to own a bunch of those knives for, you know, as expensive as handmade knives are. Were you into that for a long time, or what's the deal?
So I got introduced. So I was a big backpacker, and I got introduced to like this concept of bushcraft and like, you know, using nature rather than just being in it. And so that's when I got on Bushcraft USA, and I was on this forum, and that was like my first real exposure to full tang fixed blade knives. Like everything had been kind of smaller folders and things like that. And that's when I was introduced to like Adventure Sworn and Double A Forge and Ben Orford and all of these guys. And so I started buying some, and like everything in my life, once I find something I like there's no stopping me. So, I mean, yeah, there was a point in time where, you know, I was probably buying at least a knife a week. I mean, I bought 3 AA Forges this year, you know, like I bought one last week from Adam. I mean, you know, I like knives, but I also tell people like I buy the maker. I don't necessarily buy the knife. Like I like buying Josh Smith stuff from Montana Knife Company because I really I value what he's doing and what he stands for. You know, I like Adam stuff. These people that I'm buying knives, like there's a history there. And so I'm not just owning, because anybody can really, I mean, look at, if I can make a knife, anybody can make a knife. Like I,
yeah.
And so knowing that, like, what's the difference between, you know, this full tang and this one? It's the person behind the grinder. And so that's kind of what I try to do, is I just, my collection now is thinned out, and it's just all people that I respect.
Right. What do you sell them back like through Bushcraft forums or something, or?
Yeah, at the time. So now I'm not selling anything back anymore. Like I'm now at a place where I'm only purchasing stuff that I know I'm going to hang on to. But yeah, for a long time, like there's a trade blanket on that forum where you can, you can trade, you can sell, you can do all of that. So, I mean, I would get a knife, turn around and sell it in 2 days, you know, and then buy another one. So yeah, it's a slippery slope, but I learned a lot. That's the thing. It's like, I learned so much about the design and what makes a good knife, and being able to just hold these different knives, even if I wasn't going out and, you know, batoning it through a big log, being able to just experience that knife and see what I liked about it, see what I didn't. I think that was really kind of instrumental in my knife making journey, was just being able to have so much exposure to those.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I mean, there's, as with my background, mostly in art and painting, and, you know, knife as a hobby, like going to a museum and seeing paintings in real life that I've seen in books, or, you know, in magazines or whatever, or I know through internet searches, you know, there's something completely different about being in person with it. And the same thing with a knife. When I hold a knife from someone else, it really is a moment that you can learn from, that because there's like, you know, a tapered tang or a hidden tang or a full tang, they're all going to feel different in your hand. You know, like the weight, you're going to have front weight or back weight, or you're going to have thickness. And until you hold other people's knives and you feel their aesthetic, it's really hard to understand those different things, even as a knife maker where you make a variety of knives. You know, I think that's important. And I think that's really cool that you've done that, and I haven't done that nearly as much. And I think that'd be cool. Even something like going to Blade Show and being able to like pick up different people's knives and having all that experience in one place. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm going to have to leave my wallet at home this year for Blade Show. it's going to be tough, but you know what? I mean, honestly, like I also think it's one of the factors that drives me personally to continue to try to get better with knife making, because I can't tell you how humbling of an experience it is when you know, I think I've done my best work on a knife, and I like it. I feel good about it. And then, you know, a knife I bought from AA Forge shows up and I pull that out and I'm like, okay, back to the grinder. Like, I got to keep working. And so, you know, yeah. You surround yourself with the people that, that you look up to, that you, you know, that you want to be like, that you want to create like, yeah. And, you know, eventually, you know, fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that, what a great thing. I didn't even think of that. Someone, it's like you went the knife route that like Quentin Tarantino went the movie route, because he was around, like he worked at a movie store and he just ingested movies constantly, all the greatest movies. And he knew all about them. So you're just constantly, you know what it should, you have a good focus on what it should be, how it should feel. Mm-hmm. That's like invaluable. What a great thing to do. And then if you're trading them back and forth, you have so many in your hand. What a cool way to go about it. Because like I said, you have a clear focus of what it can be and what it should be.
Yeah, and I did it the other night, and it's funny because my wife makes fun of me because I'll pull out all my knives and I'll put them on our bed, and I'll pull out my leather strop. And, you know, she's trying to read or something, and I'm just sitting there admiring my knives, dropping them on the bed, and she's just like, wow, really? And I'll even say, hey, I'm pulling out the knives, you know? And it just, it's like, it's one of those tools that's, you know, arguably the oldest tool, right? Like, known to man. Yeah. I mean, it's just, and to just think like, this is a tool that could save my life. Yet this is a tool that could open up this the packaging on this toy for my kid. Like, it's just, there's something to me that's so mesmerizing about a sharp piece of steel.
Yeah.
So
oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's since I was probably 6, 7, 8, something like that, you know, I've had a pocket knife on me since then. You know, and like days that it's not in my pocket for some reason, I'm like, I feel lost. You know, if I don't have a knife, I'm like, what am I just going to like tear something open with my teeth? You know, like, what am I doing? What's happened to my life? But yeah, it's 100%. You know, and I made a small Puko for my wife for kind of a pre-Christmas and then kind of Christmas present. And she wanted something. She was like, well, I want a small knife that I can use to like open packages in the living, you know, kitchen or in the living room, whenever, you know, then things come in, and just to have it around, you know, if I want to go out in the garden and cut some stuff. So we kind of went back and forth, and I made some wooden templates and things for her, prototypes, so she could feel it. And it's just that, you know, like just having something there that, you know, you can pick up and use to cut. I mean, cutting things open is still, it's like something that I do every day, you know, multiple times a day. It's crazy that that's still that prevalent. We think that, you know, we don't use knives as much as we used to, but I mean, I think it's just a different use, but it's still something that's always used. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how people function without a blade on them. I mean, it's like one of those things you don't know until you have it. And then you realize how much like you've been missing out. Like I remember when I got my first Leatherman, and I put it on, you know, in a sheath, and I put it on my belt, and my wife was like, you're going to wear that on your hip? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, all right. I haven't taken that thing off in 5 years, and I use it like 8 times a day.
Yeah,
exactly. I couldn't imagine my life without my Leatherman on me.
Yeah.
And it, you know, the same thing goes for the knives. It's just, I always have one on me, and there's just something really fascinating about a blade.
Yeah. And I think most people, but especially men, have that, you know, like primal attraction to that. You know, you see another guy with a blade and you just feel like, oh, I got to get my blade out. You know, like there's something like primal and full of testosterone that we're like drawn to this, you know, the ability to use this tool to survive. Cause I think that's, you know, it's there in us to like, I know that if I need to do something, I have this on me. I wear a Leatherman Skeletool. And the reason why I have that one as opposed to a Leatherman with the case like on my hip is because I didn't like that. Like, I don't like, same thing. I'm a backpacker. So, you know, even like my pack, everything is always as like slim as possible. I don't like extra things hanging off if I can avoid it.
Right.
And so I like the idea of a Leatherman. And when I was in grad school, my one of the other students that was in the program with me had one of the only ones at the time that came with a pocket clip, and it was fairly slim, and he would like wear it in his pocket. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. And it was, you know, standard traditional Leatherman, like, you know, very geometric. And so I went to look for one like that, and there were no, at the time, this is like 2006, maybe at the time, there were no, maybe 2008, there were no Leathermans that came with pocket clips except for the Skeletal. And I really didn't like it at first because it's like swoopy and it's got holes and stuff in it. It was a little bit too like, you know, like drugstore knife type thing. And, but I got it anyway, because it was the only one that had the pocket clip, and it's been on my pocket ever since. Like,
now you love
never,
it.
Never without it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I'll say I used to, in the film school days and stuff, I would have always had a Leatherman on it, because that's like one of the main film school tools. Because back in the old days, lights used to be really, really hot. So you'd always have to be moving the barn doors on the edge of lights and stuff, but you needed something to grab them and do that. So everyone or any good person on a film crew would have a Leatherman to do that stuff with. Then you can obviously cut stuff open, but it's mainly having those pliers. But then I started doing sports and stuff, and they don't like you bringing knives into the stadium. So
yeah,
I haven't worn them as much.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely lost a couple, probably 5 or 6, 7 knives over the years from going into like a museum or a, you know, a sport, a stadium or airports, things like that. I'm like, no, you know, fortunately, all the knives that I carry on me are never like multiple hundreds of dollars in knives. So it's not all that big of a deal. It's not worth it, like, to walk the quarter mile back to the parking lot and go put your knife in your car. I'm like,
just cut your losses.
Just take it. Yeah. I'll buy another, you know, $60 knife, whatever.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about your YouTube channel and one video specifically that I thought was really fun to watch and had some fun bits to it, which was your the survival bow video that you made.
I didn't make that.
Yeah, that you made the video.
Oh, the video. Yeah, I was like, not that talented, bud.
So I love, at first of all, I love the fact that you like started the video being like, I'm not a bow guy. I just saw this and I thought it was awesome. You know, like had to buy it. I was like, that's a perfect reason to buy something. You know, it's like, true. That looks awesome. I love it. And I like, as you're like putting it together and you talk about how the hinges have to hinge out a certain way. And so you have to flip the thing over and you like, you unhook the one side and you swing it around and then you hook it back in backwards, you know, and then you're like, oh, I did it wrong on camera. Like before that, I was like, you just put it in backwards. Isn't it still the same way? I'm like watching you do it. And I'm like, am I wrong? But it was great because, you know, like as a bow maker and someone, you know, someone I shoot bows not super often, but I have in the past, you know, it was fun watching you be really excited about this thing that is like a knife, like this primal thing. Like I can shoot an arrow out of this bow even without like just because it was awesome. Like I was like, that's
right.
So much fun. You're like, I know I'm doing things wrong and I'm sure you're screaming at me for it, but I'm just having fun shooting into the fence and stuff. Yeah. So have you done anything with that since?
No, I mean, so I haven't done anything with the YouTube. I mean, honestly, like because of the videos that I watched on your guys' channel early on, I was like, well, if I'm going to do this knife thing, like I'm going to just start documenting stuff. And mm-hmm. I was doing like gear reviews and stuff like that, 'cause I really just like wanted people to see stuff that I thought was cool. And if anything else, like I just wanted to have some sort of record of the awesomeness of something I had at that moment of my life. And so I was doing that. And then I was, you know, recording. I mean, I put out a YouTube video, I don't know, a couple months ago, a disc grinder video, but like, I haven't put out a knife build video since, you know, since I got really this shop to where it is now.
Right.
But yeah, that bow, I mean, it's just one of those things where you're like, I don't know how to shoot a bow, but I saw it online and I was like, that is cool. I'm gonna get me one of those. And I've had a really good time with, you know, shooting it in the backyard and, you know, things like that. But, you know, I just, it's one of those things. It's just, it looked awesome. It is awesome.
Yeah. That, I felt that through, like, I've watched several of your videos now and I felt that in each of the videos that you were like, there was something honest about what you were trying to say or do or show. You know, it was like you did some like gear videos where you're just talking about like, not everyone can always afford the most expensive gear. Not everyone needs to, because not everyone's going to be going backpacking all the time. So let's try this stuff out. Or like when you were showing like your knife shop, you're like, this is what I have now. And you know, this is what I'm going to work toward, and just see what you can do to do different things. It felt really honest and really like easy to access. You know, that's one of those things that I think that we've tried to do over the years, is try to make our videos easy for anyone to access. You know, like you feel like you're in the shop with them. You feel like the person's saying something and trying to talk to you and give you some information, because they honestly feel like it's important to pass that along.
Yeah.
And although your channel was small and you only have, you know, a few videos, like I felt that in all those videos. I was like, oh, yeah, this is really nice. Like I could feel that coming out of the videos.
And the idea was to do a lot more with it. I mean, you guys know this. I mean, it's like to shoot something and then put it into, you know, iMovie or whatever you're using, mm-hmm. Final Cut, and edit it and make sure the audio, like once the knives took off and like people started buying them and I was like, oh man, like I can do something with this.
Yeah.
Like there was just no time anymore to be able to do that. And if I want to put out a video, like even with as little knowledge as I have is like editing and all, you know, taking good shots. Like I just set up my iPhone, yeah, and like, it still takes me several hours to get it out.
Right. Yeah.
And in those several hours, like I can cut out 10 different blades and get going on those. So I wanted to do a lot more with it. I'm glad that I've done it. And I think I told you this, Dustin, like some of those early knife videos, like I had somebody reach out to me randomly through my website a couple months ago and was like, hey, just want to let you know, like these knife videos that you put out have really helped inspire me. And like, I just finished my first blade. Awesome. I followed the instruction and it was like, all right, that was worth it. Right. It was like, it was worth it to take that knowledge and pass it on. Even though like that knowledge all now, like if I were to make a video now, I would be one of those guys that has all the tools and nobody could relate to, right, the new guy. But
right. Yeah,
at the time, that's what I had.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I know, like just thinking about that today, I was thinking that might be kind of cool to do another video, like another, like a how-to video that slows down a little bit, you know, because a lot of times in our videos now, we'll say, you know, if you want to see this, I've done it in other videos, you can go back and we'll put links in so people can look that. But I think it would be good again to, like, now that I have, you know, more tools, same thing as you, like go back through again and do another one and just kind of, but go through slower, you know? So like, okay, I'm grinding this type of thing. And there are other people who do that, you know, all over YouTube, but I think the audience is there and you know, I'd say more than half of YouTube, half of what makes YouTube channels successful is the personality, right? The people are coming back because they enjoy you and they enjoy what you're doing, you know? So I think for you, I think what would be interesting is like when you get a new tool or when you do something different or when you experience something new, then like show that, you know, because I think that, at least from what I saw, that's what gets you really excited. And I can see that in the videos. Be like, oh, you're trying something new. And so you're showing that. So it's like, yeah, you're not relying on YouTube to do that. But like you said, when you did the grinder video and the video, you said like, you were doing the research and there wasn't much out there on that grinding system from the, what's it, ORB or the
OBM. Yeah.
OBM. Yeah. And so then you were like, oh, let me do a video on it. Like that seems like a perfect reason to do a video, you know? So then you're not like pressured because you feel like you have to do stuff all the time, but you can like put that information out there when you see it, you know, when you see the
new. And you know, like I shifted to Instagram Live because what I wanted was one of the issues that I really hated as a buyer was the fact that when I would order a custom knife, I never felt an emotional attachment to that knife until it arrived at my door and I created emotional attachment with it. Right. One of the things that I really wanted when I actually formed like JD Custom Knives and made an Instagram page and kind of went like official with it was I wanted customers to be able to see them be made. Like I wanted them to be able to know that, hey, during the weeknights, every weeknight, Jordan gets on Instagram Live and I can go on, I can engage with other people who have knives being built. I can ask questions, I can get updates, and I can see things happening in the moment. Now that runs its risks because I mess up a lot, right? But like people see that. They get to see that you know, they get to see the good and the bad. And that's something I still do. I mean, every weeknight, unless there's something in my schedule, I'm on Instagram Live and people can come in and they can ask questions and they can see. And I really base like my success on how many customers are coming back and buying a second knife.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And it's not about how many knives I've sold. It's about how many repeat customers in each batch am I getting? Because it means that we've, you know, at that point they're buying the maker, right? They like the blades, but they're buying the maker. And I try to show that the cool new stuff or the things that I'm learning. It doesn't reach as broad of an audience, obviously, as YouTube, but I also don't have to edit anything. Like I can just turn my phone on in my shop and people can ask questions and we have fun.
Yeah. I'm constantly jealous of like people on Instagram or people who only do unboxing videos or just do like opinion piece videos where they just sit in front of the camera and then they're done. It's like, oh man, we need to figure out something like that.
They got a million subscribers.
We constantly have the conversation. Is there a type of video that we can do quicker? And I guess there is, and maybe that would take us away from what we do. But yeah, I mean, I can see why you would just want to focus on the business that you're creating now and not worry about YouTube. It's a different thing. You can get just as much engagement on Instagram doing live stuff, and you don't need a million views on a video if you get 100 great like eyes on something you're doing on Instagram and one of those people want to buy something. It's totally worth it, and you can make probably a better connection to that one person than a video with 10 million views.
And I mean, but you nailed it. I mean, it's just the timing. It's just like it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And I work a full-time job. Like I'm not, I'm not a full-time knife. I mean, I produce like a full-time knife maker as far as how many knives I put out. But, I, you know, I got three kids under the age of, under the age of seven, you know, and it's like, it's not enough time in the day.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not. And even if there is time, like I say, people often will send me messages asking me to like, you know, do a custom axe or something or make a knife for them. And occasionally I'll do that, but it's few and far between just because, you know, so much of my quote unquote free time is already taken up with other things. You know, like I have hobbies and things that I want to do. And then Devin and I shoot videos and we both have full-time jobs. And then, you know, like I have friends and then, you know, what spare time I have, I want to spend with my wife and daughter. You know, it's like, well, you know, I could do it, but what's my time worth? And, you know, like if I do a few of those a year, okay. But, you know, it's just not the amount. It's just not worth it sometimes. You know, it's like, I have to have my downtime and I have to have my family time.
Yeah. Know, so. And I mean, that's one of the driving reasons that I would never be a full-time maker. Like I would never do it. And I have so much respect for the guys that do, but like, I want knife making to be something that's fun, you know? And I want to be able to just say, I'm not going to do it today and be okay with that, you know?
Yeah.
So you would never be a full-time, even if like, I mean, you're getting plenty of orders now and I'm sure you're constantly making knives, but so let's say you all of a sudden you were on some show and then like you got like 5,000 orders, and unless you like upscaled, you wouldn't be able to fill them out. But, you know, hey, I can make $100,000 in a month. You still don't think you don't think you'd do that?
Well, I think there's a difference between like being a part of a production knife company where your name's behind it. You know, like Josh Smith is a really good example at Montana Knife Company, right? Like he put in his time. He's a master smith. He was the youngest master smith ever, and now he's got a very successful, you know, production knife company that's done really well and he makes great blades. I don't want to make knife making a job. Like I love it, right? Like I love it. I love working on knives. And this last year I made just a little over 200 knives this last year. And I loved every single minute of that. And if it was keeping the lights on at my house and putting food on the table, I don't think I would love it. You know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's, I mean, 100% agree. And I think that's one of the reasons why that I haven't taken on more commissions and haven't, not that I wouldn't also enjoy, you know, spending more time and making more money doing it, but you know, it's not about that. It's about being able to go down to my shop and do something that I love to do when I want to do it. You know, like you said, like not have to do it one day if you don't want to. You know, it's like, I don't want to have to go down in the shop every single day and work every day in the shop because I have to. You know, like I'll probably go down the shop every day anyway, but because I love it, you know, because that's like, that's my, as you know, and I see that, that's why our channel is called The Art of Craftsmanship, because I see that as my studio, as much as my like art studio that I have upstairs that my wife and daughter and I all use, you know, and that I'm actually sitting in right now, which is just full of art supplies and junk and packed full of stuff. This is my, my landscape that I look at every time that we're recording the podcast.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I agree. I think there's, the shop to me is that place where I can go to have fun and be creative and make things and do things that are my hobby, like axes and tool restoration and knife making and woodworking. And it's still that, it's still enjoyable to me. And it's great that it can make some money, you know, that it can pay for itself, which is, right, which is the other great thing. And, you know, like you said, you know that you can go out there and you can work and you can do some knives and you can sell them. And it's great. It'll help you buy more tools and do more of the things that you love to do.
Yeah, right. Jordan's just trying to make knives to recoup some of the expenses he's got over the years.
Spending knives.
Well, it's funny because like the other day, like I sold like 4 or 5 knives and then I turned around and bought 6. Like it was literally just a transfer of funds from my bank account to other people's for knives. But, you know, to kind of to go back to your point, Dustin, like I, you know, yes, I take orders, right? I have a like I have, you know, I have books and I have orders in there, but I don't take any money until the knife is packaged and ready to ship, and I never will. And I do, and I'm very intentional about that because A, I don't want to be in debt to anybody. And even right. If I've taken any money from you up front, now I owe you a knife. But even if you're on my, you know, my order list, until I've taken money, like I don't actually owe you anything. Like I've told you I'll do it, but it's on my time. It's when I want. And if I want to say, hey, you know what? I've decided I'm just not going to do custom orders. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to get to this. I'm not having to refund anybody. They're not feeling like they're out money. They're not bugging me about when is it going to show up and when is it going to be done.
Right.
You know, I've had some sort of resentment towards every job I've ever had in my life. And I don't want knife making to be that. And I don't think it would be any different if it was full time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a huge point too of you know, taking, even if it were like a down payment, then you owe that person something. And then it's no longer a thing you enjoy doing and that you want to do because you love it. It's because you have to do it. You know, and I think that transition is that's a tough transition. That's hard.
And they start to have like some say, or you know, it's like anything. Once they're invested, once they paid, you think that they know they do have kind of some say over what you're doing. I mean, you can ignore them, but they've already paid you some money. It's like talking to some friends who do, they work in production houses when they edit, and people, you know, they pay for these things up front and they pay a lot of money for videos and stuff. But people who know nothing about videos or editing will critique them and their edits.
Yeah.
Like over and over and over. And they have no idea. You know, well, you think you could add this in, or you think you could change this? Like, they just have that.
They're the client, right? So you're like, you know, you're on the client's time. They're paying for it. So you do what they ask you to do.
You're now, constantly.
I mean, if you have like a custom order, right? They're asking, like, do this, this, and this, this. But again, like you said, Jordan, you know, until you give it to them, it's still yours.
Right.
You've paid for everything that's gone into that knife, you know, your time and all the materials. It's still yours until they give you the money, you know, even though you're making it based off of what they want to do, what they want. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is like, I don't expect them to actually, there's no expectation for them to actually buy it. Right.
Right.
So, I mean, things happen. And I don't want is I don't want to put somebody in a financially, like a hard place financially. So, I mean, there's been times where I've finished a knife and the customer's like, look, I just cannot, like this came up.
Yeah.
And honestly, 9 out of 10 times, I just ship them the knife. I say, just pay me when you can. Like I've never been burned. Like I never have been burned, but I'll tell you this. If I do ever get burned, it won't be because of me. And that's like, I sleep easy at night knowing that I'm never going to put myself in that situation.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's big. It's important. That's really cool. You know, I think that that goes with everything that I've felt passionate about with any type of company or people. You know, honesty is key. You be honest. You do it because it's the right thing to do and because you're a good person and because that's what's, you know, that's how humans are supposed to be, right? You know, it's like
exactly.
you're supposed to do one to others as they would have you, as you would have them do to you. You know, the golden rule. Like there's something there because you should do it because it's the right thing to do. You know, right. I, as a teacher, I often have that conversation with my students, you know, and I'm an architecture teacher. So it's not like I'm teaching like anything that has to do with anything with, you know, politics or right or wrong or religion or anything. But still, I'm like, why would you do that? Like, that's not the right thing to do. One of the biggest things I'll say to my students over the years that I've found that has the most impact is when I tell a student that they're being a bad person. And they're like, then it really hits home, you know, because you could call them a jerk, you know, kids all call each other whatever. But when you're telling someone that they're not being a good person or that you think they're a bad person, it like, it makes a whole different, you know, yeah. if that worked for everybody, that'd be great. But
it's like when your dad tells you he's not mad, he's just really disappointed.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm so disappointed. Like, no.
Yeah. I'd rather you be mad. Can you be mad? Right.
Yeah. Yell again. No, I don't like this whole disappointment side of you.
Yeah. You're funny.
Well, Jordan, as we do for all of our guests, we'd love for you to tell us a disaster story. So like I've said before in the past, the disaster stories are awesome and fun and important to us because as makers and as people who have, you know, a relatively successful channel, people, you know, and social media people, everyone always just sees the polished end of what you've done. You know, there's like everything's edited. Everything's like, this is this beautiful thing. Look at it. This is how it's done. And we don't see that in between. And we don't always see that we are all makers and we all make mistakes along the way. So we love to have our guests tell us those stories about things that they've done in the past that either haven't worked out one way or another. So do you have a disaster story for us?
Yeah, I've got a lot. I had to reach into my like disaster story binder and pull out the best one. All right. So this actually happened this last year, which is great. So I was making a newer model to me, and it was like my take on a classic like fighter knife. It's a longer blade, the longest blade that I've made, which isn't very long. I mean, it was probably like 12 inches long, but it was long enough that when I went to stone, like acid wash it in ferric chloric acid, cause I was going to do a stone wash on it. It wouldn't, like the whole blade wouldn't fit into my little jar of ferric chloric acid. So I was like, okay, well I gotta figure out how to get this whole blade in there. So I had this baking dish like from the kitchen, like the shallow baking dish. And I'm like, well, I can't, you know, I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to pour ferric chloric acid in this baking dish. Cause we use this dish. Right. So I got the idea, well, I'll just line it with foil. Like I'll just foil line this and I'll dump all this acid and then I'll throw the knife in there. Well, I didn't know that when ferric acid goes on foil, the hydrochloric acid, which is like the main acid in ferric, it has like an exothermic reaction with the aluminum and it starts smoking and like, you know, the old, like the old Drano bombs that kids would make and like people would make, like, this is literally like what happens. Like it can explode. Gosh. It's smoking everywhere. Like, and at this point I can't put my hand in there. So I'm watching this thing, like just profusely smoking, eating up this foil. Now it's all over the baking dish. I don't know if the knife is getting ruined. And so like I run inside, I get on Google and I'm like trying to figure out, and it, you know, first thing is like, do not breathe that smoke. Well, I've been out there breathing this smoke for like 4 minutes. Like I'm just out there breathing this stuff like it's clean air. Ugh. And the knife ended up being fine, but we learned a valuable lesson that day. Like there's certain containers for your ferric chloric. Don't go getting crafty and trying to put aluminum in there, but yeah, it was not fun. Yeah.
What did you do? Did it just like kind of smoke itself out or?
Yeah, I just left it out there and I let it just run its course.
Eat away at the,
the aluminum.
Jeez.
Yep.
So I guess that pans no more.
No, I think we're still using the pan, actually.
Nice.
Give it a good wash.
You're like, it's glass. Pyrex will last forever.
Yeah, I think I dishwashed it or something. But there's been a number of times where stuff like that has happened. And it's just like, well, I should have probably like opened my laptop and looked this up before I made this rash decision.
That's great. I could just see you like pouring the ferric chloride like in there. And it's just like...
Like, yeah, well, and the funniest thing is like I thought I had the best idea. I was like, this is brilliant. Like I'm gonna start doing this on all of my knives. Like I can just dump it in here. And as soon as I started dumping it, and like I kept going too, like I saw the smoke and I kept dumping.
That's great. I guess that makes sense why everyone just uses PVC pipes. You know, like you just everyone uses PVC pipes.
Yeah, well, actually, I got these really. I saw another maker that had this. Like you can go to Target and you can get these plastic spaghetti containers that hold spaghetti, and they have a lid with like a little suction button to like lock the lid on.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Perfect for fair. Oh, and they're like, okay. And they're like 14 inches tall. Cause they got to hold spaghetti. Yeah, right.
Yeah. That's great.
Great.
Yeah, exactly.
Investment.
Then you got that, like, yeah, the suction that's on top and
yeah, exactly. Yeah. If it knocks over, it's not spilling, you know, it's not, you at least have, you've bought yourself a little bit of time before it starts spilling. So yeah.
Right on. That's awesome. Good job. I love it. So there you go, folks. If you're worried about making mistakes, just remember we all make mistakes. Go over and watch Don Wynn's most recent video and you see all the ones that he makes. There's one point, I'll give one point away. He's like gluing up the handle. So he's already drilled through the handle a bunch of times and like couldn't get through a bunch of spots because his drill bits weren't like sharp enough, which I've done a billion times. And like then he's got everything ready, he puts all his pins in, he's gluing everything up, and he's like got one side on, he's got the pins in, and he goes to put on the second side, and as soon as he does it he goes, oh no, and he like takes it off and he looks over at his the guy that's working with him, he's like, can you sand this tang, you know, because he like didn't scratch it up or sand it at all yet. It's like covered in epoxy and pins and everything. He's like, we gotta wipe the epoxy off now, I didn't scratch it up. I was like, oh, that's great. It's classic. You know, and who knows, that could have just been because it's like when you're trying to film YouTube and do something at the same time, you always get things screwed up, you know, everything always gets out of whack. But it was just funny. It was like, I've been there, it's good to know.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, we'd like to finish up with some recommendations. Jordan, you have any recommendations for the listeners?
Yeah, I got two of them, and I'll make them quick. Right. I don't do any of my own sheaths. I used to. Okay. I do not enjoy leather at all. And so I partnered up with two guys that I met through Bushcraft USA. One does leather and one does my Kydex, and they are just fantastic guys. They do incredible, incredible work. So, Sean is from Mountaineer Leather, and it's Mountaineer_leather on Instagram. Does incredible sheaths, axe masks. I mean, you name it, the guys do it. I carry the wallet I carry every day. He made, right, uses really quality leather and does good stuff. And then, my Kydex guy is a gentleman named Frank. And he is Jersey Devil Kydex, one word. You can check him out on Instagram. Send him a knife, and he will do magic on that knife.
Nice.
Whatever, fully customizable, and the whole deal. And they're just really, really great, honest guys that do really good work.
Nice. Have you ever done Kydex?
I have a Kydex press. I've done it a couple times. I actually did a little slip sheath for a little neck knife I made the other day. Again, one of those things where I don't enjoy it.
Right.
I just don't enjoy it. It's hard.
Yeah. It is hard. I say that about leather work. I like, it's just not my favorite. You know, I like the outcome, and I like knowing that I can do it. And again, as a hobby knife maker, I only have to do it occasionally. So if I were doing what you were doing, where I'm making, you know, lots of knives, like you said, 200 knives a year, I would probably do the same thing. I would look for someone else to do it because that's not the part that I enjoy. I just do it because it's got to be done. You know, it's you know, yeah. I know I can do it, and that there's some satisfaction there, knowing that I can do it and I will do it. But
I think that's it. Yeah. Invest enough time to know that in a pinch,
yep,
like you can pull it off, but you're not going to pursue it. And that's
right. Exactly. And then you can support someone else who can do it and does enjoy doing it. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Nice. I can change my oil, but the guy down the street will do it for $25. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe I'll let him get dirty.
Right.
All right, Dev, you got a recommendation?
Yeah. So I was talking to Dustin yesterday. I did one of these things where I just pulled the trigger. For a while, I've been looking into 3D printing stuff. And kind of like, do I have a reason to get it? And there's all these things I thought I could use for it. Then like most things, I went to like, can we use it in a video? Like, how can we use a 3D printer? And then just the idea of videos with like, I don't know, a 3D printed knife or handle scale, stuff like that might be interesting to see, you know? Okay. And like, you could do really cool designs and patterns that it would be really hard to do by hand, and just something different, you know, some type of weird 3D printed handle scales.
Yeah, right.
So that's how I kind of sold it to myself. Like, I can at least do that and make a video, and we can get some content out of it. But there's also all these other weird little things and gaming things you can deal with, and you can like print out little like mini figures. And I've always wanted to do a train garden for Christmas.
Oh, nice.
So you can print out, I mean, they have free documents where you just download them and you can print out like houses and stuff.
Yeah.
So I found one, the Ender 3 V2. I just ordered it today and it's going to come tomorrow.
Dang.
Good old Amazon. Yeah. There you go. So I'll be messing with that a lot and trying to get that right. But there's a YouTube channel I've been watching a lot. This guy just dealing with all type. Yeah, I think he's more of a gamer and stuff. So he does like scenery for tabletop games. The channel is 3D Printed Tabletop.
Okay.
But he's just got such a good personality. The videos are really good, really high production quality. He was just really good to listen to and watch. And he makes all type of stuff and happens to have the same printer I have now. So,
oh, nice.
I'm excited. But he just good stuff if you're looking into 3D printed stuff and gaming stuff, I guess, too. He does a lot of that.
Yeah, that's cool. One of the things that I actually thought of and I wrote down at some point in some notebook was like, because at our school I have a 3D printer, but before I was teaching the class I'm teaching now, there was another 3D printer in the building. And so I thought like it would be cool to print out some type of, you know, like you said, like a scale, like handle scale blank with some type of recessed pattern in it, and then fill it with epoxy. Mm-hmm. You see, you get this like clear epoxy with like a pattern underneath of it. So I thought that'd be kind of cool. So it might be interesting to play with that. Something, you know, that it would be hard to do by hand.
There was, I don't know, like a year and a half ago, I broke a little piece on my cheap Harbor Freight drill press. And it was like the little, it was like a plastic piece that was like the stopper for the depth gauge. Yep. And I couldn't buy just that part. And it was a cheap, you know, drill press, but I didn't want to have to go buy another one. And I found like the 3D printed file online. And so I just put something on Bushcraft USA. It was like, hey, does anybody have a 3D printer? And there was a guy like 20 minutes from my house that was like, I'll print that out for you. And so he printed out two. And I went over there, and that's been on my drill press for like over a year, working flawlessly. Like those 3D printers, I mean, endless possibilities.
Yeah, they're amazing. I was just going through, they have a bunch of websites where people put up free designs, and it is everything you can think of, like tool holders and hooks and things to hold this and that, and things for your for your drill bits. And then you'll see like a couple toys, and then like some orc minifigure, and there'll be a guy who's made something for like his drills to hang them up like on the wall, or there'll be all these little parts, all these weird things that 10 years ago people couldn't produce. Like, I just got a new fridge, and this little like C-ring, plastic C-ring, comes in very specific sizes to level the two doors out.
Mm-hmm.
And like for a while I couldn't find them anywhere. I was like, what am I gonna do? Like, am I gonna wedge something in there to get them uneven? Because that was really bothering me, that whatever eighth of an inch that, but then I finally found them. And just little things like that, these little plastic bits that you couldn't make before, now you can. It's interesting. And I'm sure I'll be complaining about that in the next couple of weeks, trying to get it working right. But hopefully in a month or two, maybe we can do some type of video with a weird handle or something.
Yeah, right on. Sounds awesome. Yeah, I like the idea of doing, you know, stuff that would be much harder to do by hand. You know, like obviously anything with like little teeny details or like specific logos. You know, if you're trying to do something that's a logo, that's someone's logo, you know, like it's hard to do that right by hand. So,
right.
You know, carving things away. Or it would take way, way longer. But yeah, I think that's cool. Well, my recommendation this week is a gentleman by the name of Matthew Aaron, and his Instagram is at Aaron Creative Company. So Matt reached out to me a couple weeks ago. I can't remember exactly when it was, and I can't remember exactly why, but I posted something on Instagram, and he reached out to me, and we were talking back and forth about some stuff. And then he asked me, he said, are you interested in exchanging some shout outs for some, Damascus. And I was like, well, I don't make Damascus, but you know, thanks anyway. And then he was like, no, I make Damascus and I'd like to send you some, you know, if you want to post it on Instagram and just, you know, tag me along with it. And I was like, absolutely. I'm more than happy to do that. You know, like that's the great thing about makers and people is like, we can all work together to build everybody up. So he actually made some custom Damascus for me and sent it to me and I got it today. And it's got like a kind of a chevron pattern to it. It's obviously not etched yet. So, but I have a blank that's about an inch and a half by, I'd say 9 inches long by about an eighth of an inch. So I'm excited. I'll be doing a knife with this. So thank you so much, Matthew Aaron, for sending this out. I'm really excited to try it out and do something with Damascus for the first time. So
was this the official shout out or do you owe him another one?
No, that's it. That's all he's getting. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm going to take some pictures and I'll post. And obviously as I make it and stuff, you know, I'll post it and just like make sure he's on there. So
hey, when you do your etch, but make sure you don't put your ferrite in foil. Right.
No, this one's only, like I said, 8 inches long. So I'll get a 14 inch spaghetti container and I'll be perfect. Good to go.
Or one of those old cereal containers.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, like our grandmother always had the cereal containers with like the Tupperware pop top. You know, yep. She makes like five
different cereals in there. She'd be like, you want some honey bunches of Cheerios? Like, no, mom, I'm good.
All right. Well, Jordan, thank you so much, man. This has been a blast. It's been super awesome to have you on. I know we've talked over the last couple months or, you know, year or so back and forth. So it's fun to be able to actually chat with you and have a conversation. Where can people find you even more if they want to find you on all the social medias?
Yeah, sure. So my Instagram is JD_custom_knives. And then my website is JDCustomKnives.com. And I have my cell phone number is on there, so you can call me. I got a chat feature on there and try to be as accessible as possible. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I was, we've become pretty good friends with Brian House from the Housework Channel. And he, I watched a video of his maybe a year and a half now. And he put his cell phone number in the video. He's like, if you need help or if you have a question, call me. And it was like straight there. I was like, dang, that's bold. And then I had the same thought when I went to your website and it was like, your cell phone number was there. I was like, well, you know, like if that's what you do, right. You know, like that's your whole point is that you want to be, you know, approachable, right. You want to have that relationship with the people that you're making stuff for. Cause it's important that they know who you are. They know your story and they know, you know, you're like that you're doing something that's coming from your hand. I think that's important.
Right. Absolutely.
That's cool. Awesome, man. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jordan. It's been a blast. Everybody, thank you all so much for listening. Make sure that you go check out Jordan. Go give him a follow. Go over to his YouTube channel and like it there because he's got some really cool videos. If you like what you're hearing and you like what you see on our YouTube channel, please go over to YouTube and follow us and subscribe there. And you can follow both Devin and I on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship and at The Art of Camera Guy. And if you want to support us more, you can always head over to Patreon / The Art of Craftsmanship and you can support us there. It makes a really big difference, and we are forever grateful for all of our Patreon supporters. So thank you all so much. And everyone else who's listening, we really appreciate all of you as well. So thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.